Hello, and welcome to the May 2014 edition of the Insurance Contracts podcast. My name is Andrea Pride. I'm the Insurance Contracts Technical Staff, and I'm joined here by Daryl Scott, one of our board members. So, Daryl, the board meeting this month fell into two parts. First, we had an education session on participating contracts, and then we made some decision-making sessions on matters mostly related to non-participating contracts. The participating contract section was probably the one that was of most interest to many observers, so let's start with that. How did you find the discussion went?
Andrew, I think, and perhaps it's worth starting out by saying we had two staff papers prepared for us for that session. I think the staff papers were very good in structuring the issue that we have to discuss and bringing to the front the complexity involved in the PAR discussion. PAR has been left as part of our process until relatively the end of the discussion process, largely because of the complexities involved in it. I found the board discussion very interesting. I think the board members were able to get into and explore some of the technicalities and some of the difficulties that we've encountered in the past and that we're going to encounter as we work through this process. The PAR discussion's also been framed to a certain extent or assisted to a certain extent by quite a lot of input that we've received from outside constituents. And I think the views that we've heard from outside constituents have helped us in forming a view, but also have had to be taken into account as the board considers what its primary objective is with the standard and what its primary objective is with the standard in the context of all the other standards we've produced. So I found the discussion at times quite wide-ranging. But nevertheless, I think to the point of giving the board members the opportunity to explore their own understanding of the issues, I would urge anybody who is very interested in this topic to have a look at the underlying papers. I think the papers are really worthwhile and worth a read to get the understanding of the issues. Should anybody actually want to listen to the board session, I really do suggest you read the papers first, because the discussion was quite wide-ranging in trying to get our heads around the topics.
Okay, so we divided up the papers into a number of issues, and I think these are the issues that will be the questions that we'll be seeking to get decisions from the board in due course. We looked first at whether or not there is actually a need to bifurcate cash flows for measurement of the insurance contract, and I think we're fairly comfortable that the existing decisions on fulfilment cash flows don't need very much adaptation. We've already got some tweaks in there in the 2013 ED, of course, but we were comfortable that there was nothing in the measurement itself that would require a bifurcation of cash flows, which of course was one of the biggest concerns in the feedback to the insurance contracts project. And I think we also noted at that time that we would be bearing in mind that feedback as we went through the other decisions as well to try and avoid that situation going forward. I think one of the areas where we had the biggest discussion to start with was really the treatment of the insurer's share of the underlying items, as we characterise it in the paper. And the discussion there was about whether you would see this amount, which is ultimately profit for the insurer, as profit arising because of an implicit fee, or whether because it's profit arising from an economic interest in the underlying items. And I think there was a fair diversity of views expressed and at the board table, and I think all the board members deepened their understanding certainly about the relative arguments and the relevant pitfalls that each approach might have. Do you have any other comments on that?
Well, I think this is probably one of the topics that we're going to be spending a considerable amount of time over the next couple of months on, because it is a topic of some difficulty, and it's one of those areas where one might argue that at least some in the industry have a very strong view that at least some in the board think conflicts with the basic way that we look at these type of instruments in our other standards.
Yeah. The next question we had was on the allocation of the contractual service margin and profit or loss, and this follows on from a discussion on the allocation for non-participating contracts, which we'll come back to in a little bit. And I think there was a sort of broad consensus of the board that they supported the staff view on that. The next two topics dealt with the changes in estimates that happen after initial recognition, and how do you treat changes in estimates of cash flows that arise from changes in estimates of underlying items. I think, again, there was a reasonable comfort level with putting them into the statement of comprehensive income, because that would be the way to avoid any accounting mismatches. And there is also a question there of what would happen in terms of a split between profit loss and other comprehensive income, which I think was probably an area that we would still need to be considering. Linked to that as well is the question of what do you do with changes in estimates of the value of options and guarantees. And I think, again, from the discussion at the board table, these will be areas in which we'll be spending an increasing amount of focus. Do you have any observations on those?
Again, I think the board had a good opportunity to get into some of the details here. I think the paper helped guide us to understand perhaps a little bit more, get more into the depth of what the underlying issues are and what the concerns are that have been raised with us. Some of these decisions as we start to deal with this become very dependent on where we go with OCI and how we determine the OCI final outcome. So there's starting to be an interplay now between the different components of the model. And that, I think, will also drive the way the agenda unfolds over the next couple of months.
Yes. So just picking up on that, the next steps we'll do on the participating contracts topic is we'll begin to bring papers back from next month. All the decisions that ISB makes are, of course, tentative decisions. But I think in this area where you have a lot of interrelated topics, we'll be bearing in mind that there'll be some need to review that as we go along and make perhaps decisions slightly more tentative than they have been in the past. Putting the participating contracts education session aside then, we also talked about areas that were not targeted for specific comment in the exposure draft, but which at the last meeting the board decided it would consider anyway. And we dealt with four out of the seven that the board agreed to discuss, and that was on the allocation of the contractual service margin to profit or loss for non-participating contracts. Fixed fee service contracts, there's a request that we have a specific exception. How significant insurance risk should be read for a particular type of contract, where I think we needed to make a tweak. And also portfolio transfer and business combinations. And the board made fairly, had a relatively little discussion of these, I think reflecting in part the nature of the topic and the fact that these were non-targeted issues. The one exception for that, I suppose, would be on the allocation of the contractual service margin, because I think this possibly has implications for other topics. Would you like to comment on that?
Certainly. And I think one of the areas of feedback we got from constituents to the 2013 ED was a concern that although they were generally comfortable with what we were trying to achieve with the allocation of the CSM over the life of the underlying contract, they were concerned about what we meant by the services inherent in the contract. Now, that in itself is something that the board probably would have been comfortable under ordinary circumstances to allow practice to develop, to allow people to get a better understanding. But I think that concern was added to by a further element, which was that the interpretations that were suggested or that were coming through as part of that feedback process were in fact very divergent. And so the consideration that the board applied when thinking about this was that we had an area that was subject to a considerable amount of interpretation. The board didn't necessarily feel in discussing the issue that there would be much useful additional guidance we could apply on top of what the guidance was already. And so what we've ended up with is going for a fairly constrained or fairly explicit description of how we expect to see this the CSM being spread. And that's describing the CSM as a function of time, and therefore the allocation of CSM to the period of the contract should be spread over that time period. It does mean that it's more explicit guidance than perhaps we're giving in other places, but we feel given the nature of the topic and given the nature of the difficulty people are experiencing in interpreting it, that was the most expedient answer that would work best in practice.
And I think probably the thing that many will find most sort of counterintuitive about that answer is that I think many think of it as that the contractual service margin ought to somehow reflect the pattern of claims and benefits under the contract. And I think this point was acknowledged in the discussion, and our conclusion was that because the contractual service margin really reflected what was left after you've taken out the expected claims, expected risk, then a passage of time pattern was an appropriate one.
And I think, Andrea, that's important. And I think we sometimes forget with this model that there are building blocks to the model, and that those building blocks are reflected in the balance sheet, but they also reflected in the income statement. and that to an extent things like claims and benefits and the effect of those claims and benefits are already accounted for in other components of the building block. So the effect of them will flow through the income statement as a consequence of that. The CSM is something unique because it stands apart from those other elements. And I think it was because of that that the board was comfortable with the straight line approach.
Great. Okay, so that, I think, concludes our podcast from the May board meeting. We will be back next month, and the idea there is we'll start bringing some of the papers on the participating contracts for decision-making, tentative decision-making, as I mentioned earlier, and we will continue working our way through the areas that were not targeted in exposure draft in hope of making good progress with that. But that's it for this month, and we'll speak to you next month. Thank you.